Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
It's time to get the morning sports news on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back to the Kia Studios on a Monday morning. Hopefully you're having a safe drive in. Bright sunshine this morning. Hopefully that by the rain from this weekend all over the place left it hot and muggy. We've had, there ain't no drought going on around here, that's for sure. Hopefully you have a safe drive in and get ready for a week, and we'll see what the week brings because it has been an amazing weekend now with both the Braves headed out of town and Atlanta United headed out of town. How about that? The Braves yesterday, that's one of the big questions, one of the things we're talking about on our social media, Hugh, whether or not that win means maybe something special's in the air.
It could potentially mean that. I know a lot of people are talking about that this morning, especially on my Twitter feed, and I think that you should enjoy it because Grant always talked about Memorial Day and how, you know, when you get closer to Memorial Day, that's who you really are. This team looks really good. They look really, really good. And I think that with everything that has happened in the past, you should just enjoy it. Not poo-pooing anything that anybody's talking about as far as in having fun and being optimistic about this team. But there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. But enjoy it while it's here. No doubt about that.
Well, there's no doubt that the Braves are enjoying this right now. I mean, what an incredible finish against the Miami. I think I actually called them the Florida Marlins earlier today. Old habits die hard. The Miami Marlins yesterday with that coming off the deck, basically a 6-run, 2-out rally in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, that's basically what it was. We'll get to all the good things about that Braves rally in a moment. There's also some controversy to talk about what happened at Mercedes-Benz Stadium last night between Atlanta United and New York Red Bulls. The game started off with New York on the attack and Atlanta counterattacking, and then for a while in the first half, all of the run of play was for the five stripes, including what appeared to be a pair of goals. We begin with the first.
Here's Barco, middle attacking third. Ezekiel Barco to Almiron at the top of the arc. Hit shot to Flex. Barco is there, shoots, score! Broken play goal, Ezekiel Barco's third goal of the season, and the goal did come. Atlanta United's got a 1-0 lead.
Mike Cunningham on 92 in the game. That after a couple of Miguel Almiron shots, almost could have scored too. But then about 5 minutes later, Atlanta United was back on the board again for a moment.
Julian Gressel sending it into the middle for Joseph Martinez, who's onside, makes his man fall. Martinez dribbling in, shoots, score!
Yeah.
They're going to go to VAR. So Mark Geiger, the VAR, wants Penso to take a look at this.
He looked at it very quick.
Looked at the monitor very quickly. And now Penso will come back onto the playing surface, make the VAR signal. No goal.
Yeah, no goal. It was disallowed. We'll talk about that in just a moment here. And Jason Longshore and Mike Conahue.
They definitely pointed it out. And like I said earlier, there is reason to speculate. Everything that you talked about this morning. But I think, you know, some things should be left unvoiced. That was one of them.
As for the game, Red Bulls ended up getting another controversial call that led to a penalty kick to tie the game. And then Bradley Wright Phillips, he had a pair of goals. And this is where Atlanta United actually lost the game. Their back line could not check him.
Coming back the other way, the Red Bulls. Here's a shot and another goal by Bradley Wright Phillips. Off the crossbar and in. And the Red Bulls have taken command here in the 55th minute.
They did. And Mike Honey's right. A 3-1 Red Bulls win. Brad Guzan after the game. What did he have to say about all of this mess?
We weren't great with the ball tonight. We were a bit sloppy. We weren't tidy. Too many careless passes. Too many bad touches. Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, we weren't good enough today. So we're not making excuses. We weren't good enough. But obviously there were some other issues that influenced the game to a certain extent.
Yeah, obviously there were some other issues that influenced the game to some extent. He's right on both counts. They weren't good enough. This was not their A game. They should have won the game. If they had been up 2-0 and the Martinez goal, which I think should have stood because I thought the contact was incidental, I think it should have been 2-0. But that's not what happened. Now, against Sporting Kansas City and against New York Red Bulls, in their last two games, Atlanta United has lost to two high-press teams, and they've lost by a total of a count of 5-1 aggregate, okay? And in both of those games, there was one official that was involved in both of them. His name is Mark Geiger. Geiger was the on-field official for the game against Sporting Kansas City. He was the video official for the game against New York Red Bulls, all right? And so the video-assisted review of the Martinez goal, the referee on field went over to look at it, and all you can think is Geiger's telling him, no goal, no goal, no goal, because he runs over here to the monitor, and he basically, this is how long he spent at the monitor, okay? I get to the monitor, I'm gone for the monitor. I mean, he wasn't there for half a second. It's not like he looked it over. He just went over. It was like cursory. I guess I have to look at the monitor. Okay, I looked at the monitor by. I mean, it's not. He didn't really look at it. He couldn't have. He didn't stay there a second. It literally was not there 2 seconds.
Oh, no, I get it. I get it, and I don't understand why people are upset. I even had people on Twitter talking about, you know, this game is going to come down to the officiating. But to that point, you have there are opportunities that were missed for Atlanta United last night, and I think that even though you feel that way about the officiating, sometimes you just can't say it, you know, because then, you know, you start to make people believe that the fix is in and everything like that. And not only that, John, earlier this season, there was some players talking negatively about Atlanta United. And I think it was the New York Red Bulls saying that they are the darlings of MLS, and that the fact that everybody else doesn't get as much shine as these two teams do. So, you know, I just think that with Major League Soccer doing so well, especially here in the city of Atlanta, certain things like that, you don't want to give the game a black eye.
Well, Tata Martino said after the game, the head coach of Atlanta United, he said, I'm not talking about one referee. This is Tata in the AJC. He says, I'm talking about Geiger. He says, I'm talking about the same person. In one game he refereed, in the other game he reviewed, and they were decisive in the outcome of the game. Because in those two games against Sporting Kansas City and against New York Red Bulls, Geiger, you had a red card, right? There could have been a lot of red cards, but only Atlanta United got a red card in Sporting Kansas City, and only Atlanta United got a red card in New York Red Bulls. And two goals were pulled off the board, both by Joseph Martinez. I'm just saying that if I'm Atlanta United,
Joseph had an issue with it because I think he got all up in his face too. I think at one point I saw him all up in his face. I mean, and I don't speak Spanish, but it felt like there was some choice words being exchanged. It has to be frustrating, but you know, going back to that thing we used to say in American football, you can't let the refs dictate the game. You got to go out there. You have to play better, and that's kind of the stance that I'm taking on this one. But no, as far as do you think there's something there? Yes, it has to be. But I think also that it does not. You can't say it. You can't say it.
Well, they have, and because they have, it'll be interesting to see how Major League Soccer, you know, responds to this. You know, how MLS, you know, is Atlanta United going to get fined? Will they fine Tata? I mean, he made direct reference to Mark Geiger. I would hope that Atlanta United would protest any game that Geiger is the official of from now on, because that's back-to-back at home. And again, it just seems slanted. I'm not saying he's on the take. I'm saying maybe it's because, you know, Atlanta United gets all this shine. They got the big article in the New York Times, et cetera, and people don't like Atlanta United. Maybe we're becoming the bad guys.
That's the thing I'll think about. You know, some people get upset when you feel like you're the favorite child, you know, the favorite son. And maybe that has something to do with it, but that's something that MLS, I think, needs to deal with internally, because the game's going so well and Atlanta United's attendance is so great. I just feel like you shouldn't tarnish the game like that and say things like that in public. You need to go ahead and talk to somebody at Major League Soccer to ask them what the heck is going on with this officiating that they're doing.
Well, Atlanta United has 10 days off to brood on all of this before they play their next game, which won't be till a week from Wednesday, on the road at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough against the New England Revolution. Meantime, let's talk about the good stuff. The Atlanta Braves, okay? So they're down, you know, 6-0. They battle back, make it 6-4, and then they go down 9-4. They get to one out in the bottom of the ninth, down 9-4, and nothing working for them. And all of a sudden, everything does. You know, you get a couple men on. You get a sack fly from Ronald Acuna to make it 9-5. All right, that's fine. That's good. You're down four, but you also have two outs. Then all the two-out magic starts to happen. Marquez, Freddie Freeman, Suzuki, and it all leads to run 9-6, 9-7, 9-8. And then Dansby Swanson comes up. Man of mercy. Two outs. Bottom of the ninth, two strikes on Dansby.
The 2-2 pitch.
Line drive! It is! Fire!
How about that 6-run, 2-out rally in the bottom of the ninth inning to beat Miami?
Amazing. And I'll be honest with you. When it got ugly in the fourth, I bailed because I'm like, man, it's tough to come back from that deficit. But the Braves did it. And then when they were in the ninth inning and Dansby Swanson coming up, I'm like, man, this is not going to happen this way. But I tuned in for it, and, man, he came up big. He came up big in that situation. So, yeah, the Braves are exciting. There's something to be excited about when it comes to Atlanta Braves.
Now, here's Dansby after the game talking about the big hit.
Without everyone else, we wouldn't even be in that position anyways. And I can't say enough about how much I love these guys. And they're like family to me. You know, we talked about that. And they're always there for me. I'm always there for them. And just to be able to do that right there is incredible.
Yeah, and Freddie Freeman talking about the fact that this game was everything that you could have wanted.
There's not really many words I can put into that. That was probably one of the most exciting games I've ever played in or been a part of and watched. It's what these guys have been doing. Just keep grinding that fast, no matter what the score is. That was pretty incredible to watch.
Well, no time for wasting here, because you have a whole bunch of stuff coming at you over the next couple of weeks here, because the Atlanta Braves now can't really celebrate this too much. Tonight they're going to be on the road in Philadelphia, the first of a three-game set against the Phillies. That will be the battle for first place right now in the National League East. And here goes this huge three-game set for the Phillies. And then over the weekend, a three-game set in Boston against the Red Sox. And so we'll find out a lot about the Braves.
Yeah, true test. One of the better teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball, the Boston Red Sox. Not overlooking the Phillies right now, because they're right behind you. I think you got 1.5 game lead over the Phillies, so that's going to be an important series. But these two series coming up, very, very important for the Braves, and to see where you're going to be positioned at the end of that.
Matter of fact, the next 12 games, Hugh, 3 against the Phillies for first in the NL East on the road, 3 against the Red Sox in Fenway Park. You get home for 3 against the Mets, and home for four, check that, against the Washington Nationals. That's 13 games against the Phillies, Boston, the Mets, and Washington. Wow. Yeah, that's a 13-game stretch we'll have to keep our eye on, see how important this 13-game stretch is to the Braves by the time they get done with it, which will be first of next month. You'll see where the Braves stand. So, in first place at the moment, and all things are good for the Atlanta Braves, and an incredible win in that rally last night for the Atlanta Braves. 6-run bottom of the ninth. And it came, by the way, 8 years to the day that the Braves had a grand slam walk-off against the then Florida Marlins, when Brooks Conrad had a grand slam to walk-off against the Florida Marlins in 2010. And it just happened on the same day. All right, today's the day that you're going to win $1,000. Just tell yourself that. You're going to win $1,000 today. Matter of fact, you're going to do it right now.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
SALT. SALT, S-A-L-T. Till 8:59, you have to text SALT, S-A-L-T, to 72881. SALT to 72881. Do not text and drive. Message to data rates may apply. SALT is the word for the hour, S-A-L-T, SALT, to 72881. And I've got to probably cut down on my salt. I know that John Chuckery's doing that, and he's having a lot of success, which is good. I got to cut down on that salt. I know. But I like salt. That's my problem. I tell you who was salty last night. The head coach of the Houston Rockets. He was salty because his team was soft last night because they got run flat out the building.
5 minutes remaining in the third. Curry for three. Yes!
Yeah, how about Steph Curry and company beating Houston last night in the biggest rout in postseason history for the Warriors? They won by 41 points.
Steph is underrated for the toughness factor, but you don't become a two-time MVP just by shooting a bunch of threes. You know, he's got unbelievable stamina, physical toughness, mental toughness. You know, for 4 days, everybody's been talking about him. And what he did tonight didn't surprise any of us.
You know, we had the first game where Houston had the big game from Harden, and everybody said they won the game, Hugh, and everybody said, maybe this year is different. Do you think, basically, after last night, that this year is any different? Golden State leads 2-1.
No, but you knew that game that they had, the last game that they played, John, that in order for them to win, they had to play like that every night. I mean, realistically, they got to do that every night. And that was the biggest question. Yeah, they had a hell of a game, but can you sustain that? And right now it looks like that's not the case. You know, you had 3 days off and you come out there, and Steph didn't have the first two games, really didn't see a whole lot of Steph Curry. He came up big last night. He came up huge last night. So that was the question going into it, to see if you could sustain that level of play and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, Houston went to Golden State, got beat by 41 on Saturday. Boston went to Cleveland and got beat by 30 by the Cavaliers.
Backdoor James throws it down. Perfect bounce pass from Kevin Love, and it's back up to 20.
Big time finish by LeBron James.
Yeah, so Cleveland won 116-86. The Celtics still lead that series 2-1. Game 4 is tonight in Cleveland, but you know, here, you know, it's so funny. Just when you think one team's got it, the other team not only loses, but they lose by 30 or they lose by 41.
Well, going into this series, you knew that LeBron James, in order for him to win, that his teammates had to come up and help him out. They did the other night. He had a good game, and J.R. Smith came to play. Kevin Love came to play. I think Kyle Korver had like 12, 13 points, something like that. I don't have the box on the score in front of me, but they came up. They came to play the other night, and that's what you need. You need some contribution from somebody else because you know LeBron's going to give you what he has, and that's what they did. And I know that Boston's probably looking at it right now, and they're probably scratching their head, but still a lot of basketball left to be played. And they have to get it together, especially playing in Cleveland. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I think that series is now wide open. Even though the Celtics have a 2-1 lead, I think that series could go either way. I think the West might be over, even at 2-1. I mean, because if Houston is going to do this, I don't know what they can marshal. But Steph is obviously back in his game with KD, and it's not a question of Houston being not a good team with CP3 and James Harden. But there's that Golden State is just next level at times.
But none of these games have been close, like Boy just pointed out to me. So it's they could both potentially go to 7, though, John, because it seems like one team has it one night, another team has it the next night. So it's something that, you know, it's a pretty good series right now.
What a weekend it was. There's also a pretty big news that it could change the SEC. The SEC West race could have changed over the weekend. And it involves a quarterback, and we'll tell you why next. Back at the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on this Monday, where so much has happened over the weekend, and we're talking about all of it, it seems, on our Twitter right now, at 92.9 The Game, discussing the officiating in Atlanta United and talking about the incredible comeback by the Atlanta Braves and whether or not, every magical season has to have magical moments, I'm just saying. And that was a magical moment yesterday when you get 6 runs in the bottom of the ninth at home to win a game that you should otherwise never have won. So we're talking about all that. We invite you to go to our Twitter at 929 The Game and be part of the conversation, vote on our Vision Computer poll about what was the best thing over the weekend and much more. College football. Not that I have an app on my phone that tells me exactly how long it is to college football, but it is, Hugh, 96 days, 4 hours, 35 minutes, and 47 seconds until...
About what, 3 months?
That's like three months.
Something like that, yeah.
3 months to August 25, which is the opening day of college football this year, August 25th. A couple of notes. The SEC will honor the passing of the legendary Billy Cannon, who was one of the true greats in the history of college football. Lived an interesting and, I don't know why, up and down life. Ended up in prison, was put in the Hall of Fame, then taken out of the Hall of Fame, put back in the Hall of Fame, and then spent the rest of his life after he got out of prison becoming a dentist who became the prison dentist and counseled guys in prison and became that's what he did for the rest of his life. So an amazing life for Billy Cannon and the honor, the legendary Billy Cannon. So as LSU loses a legend, maybe designate another one. There are talk, you know, we all talk about the SEC West and Alabama, rightfully so, Hugh, and the discussion about Tua and Jalen and what's going to happen at quarterback. Will Jalen quit? Will he be the starter? Will Tua, blah, blah, blah. There's that issue. Second issue has been that forever and a day, LSU has not had a quarterback. Well, they have no excuses now because they have one. Joe Burrow, the star quarterback from Ohio State, who presumptively was going to be the starter at Ohio State, has decided officially and signed to play with LSU with Ed Orgeron at LSU. So LSU's got its quarterback. Now, of course, he's going to have to, you know, there's other players, you know, some youngsters he's going to have to, you know, battle for the job. But really, I have to think that Joe Burrow went to North Carolina. He went to Cincinnati. He went to LSU. He was offered by a lot of teams. We heard that his dad was saying, basically, you have to guarantee him the starting job. I think that's what we were hearing, right?
I don't remember that. I don't remember that story specifically, but I do remember he had a choice of teams that he could potentially go to. And, you know, I think LSU was probably the better fit for him because he had an opportunity to start there.
Well, certainly, you know, LSU, if Joe Burrow is as advertised, LSU's got a good one. And even with the losses that LSU had in the offseason, and they lost a lot of players, of course, when you lose a Darius Geis, when you lose an Arden Key. But, you know, the linebacker White is extraordinarily good. Their offensive line is back intact. They elevated Steve Ensinger to offensive coordinator because it just didn't work out with Dave Canada. And I think now with a new quarterback, it'll be interesting to see how much this changes the complexion. I thought, quite frankly, coming into this year, even with a young quarterback, that LSU was a 9-10 win team. Now, if Burrow is that guy, Hugh, suddenly Auburn and Alabama have serious competition.
That's what you would think, John, because the one thing that you know about LSU to be true over the years is that you can make them, definitely make them one-dimensional. They've never been in a situation where they've developed young quarterbacks. They've had young quarterbacks back there being the signal callers, but when you put them in a situation where you take away that running game from them, they tend to come up really, really short as far as throwing the ball is concerned. And this also gives them an opportunity to try to develop a young quarterback. I think that's where LSU has been lacking over the years. They haven't done a good job of developing quarterbacks. So by having a quarterback on your roster now, that gives you an opportunity to at least groom a young one to take over when he's gone.
And I know some fans are going to say, well, this is just like Malik Zaire going to Florida. No, I got to say, I think it's different. The limited things that I've seen, Miles Brennan got in last year through 24 passes, and he may be a pretty good quarterback. The limited things that I saw from Joe Burrow can play.
Yeah, they said he was in competition at Ohio State. Joe Burrow, when who was the last one there? That just
Haskins.
Yeah, I think it was him.
Oh, you mean
no, yeah, no, no, JT no, Barrett. No, JT Barrett. That's right. It was JT Barrett, John, and he was in competition. But I guess something went south there, and that's why he decided to transfer. So they have a guy who can throw the rock, but I think that they need to use this time that they're going to have with Joe Burrow and actually develop a young quarterback. They're going to have to. Because I think Joe Burrow's he's graduated. Mm-hmm. The last time he's graduated.
He's got two seasons.
But he has two seasons under his belt, right? So you have two seasons in order to, like, basically groom a young player, a young quarterback. You have to do a better job of that. You really do. You can't rely on transfers to come in and save and pull you out of the fire. You have to do a better job of developing young quarterbacks.
And that SEC West just got a little more interesting, didn't it? Alabama, Auburn, now LSU with Joe Burrow quarterback, and who knows how much of an impact Jimbo Fisher will have at Texas A&M. That SEC race, that West race, could be a little bit more interesting than I think some people originally thought. Oh, it's going to be Alabama and Auburn again. Well, now you can add LSU into the mix and that wild card of what ATM might be down in College Station. So, just to keep your mind on that. One other college note here. We made a big to-do last week, and rightfully so, about the fact that the Supreme Court has now ruled that states can, you know, set their own rules about legalized gambling, and we expect that certain states are going to be able to do this rather quickly. One of those states that can do it, like, they'll be up and running here in a month.
Jersey.
Jersey. And another state is Mississippi with Biloxi. Okay, so Biloxi is going to become a sports betting capital in short order, like at the Beau Rivage and the other casinos down on the Redneck Riviera down there. So that'll be interesting because it's in the heart of SEC country. The reason I bring this up is you may have heard the other side story to this where the NBA took the lead and then the NFL kind of jumped in and said, we need a cut. We need a cut of the money that these casinos are going to get. Well, the NCAA has now done it. West Virginia and Marshall. Because the state of West Virginia has casinos, and they think that they can get sports gambling into West Virginia pretty quick, like within a month. West Virginia Marshall leading the way and saying they need some money. And I actually, Hugh, I totally agree with them. I think that the NCAA schools ought to get a cut of this money in order, because unlike the pro leagues, who are already, you know, they have these, the NFL's got NFL security, and they, you know, they're already monitored for all this stuff. These colleges, you're adding a layer. You're adding, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand, maybe more every year to every college, maybe more than that, to hire one or two people, maybe 300,000 or 400,000, to do nothing but monitor for this.
Yeah, and I was just told in my ear that Connecticut, UConn, has also joined that case. But my question would be to that, John, if the NCAA is trying to get a little cut of this, when is it going to matriculate down to the players? When they're going to start setting the rules where the players can actually get some of this kickback or some of this monies that they're talking about giving these colleges. Because that's what it's all – I think that's when the argument to start paying players, that's when it becomes a lot louder when you have things like this. If the gambling and casinos kick back money to the colleges, then there has to be something for the players as well, because they're the ones that are driving everything. So you have to give them something.
You're not going to get any argument from me. I've always been in favor of this in terms of I have my own way of doing it. We all have different ways of doing it, but I entirely agree. And I think that the compensation, I'm not really worried about corruption from gambling on the professional level. These players make way too much money to, you know, throw a game for a couple $100,000. On the collegiate level, I've covered this. I've been doing this a long time. I was down at Tulane. And at SMU, when Tulane got banned from college basketball, when SMU got banned from college football, and I had to cover both of those stories, met with the then president of Tulane, Eamon Kelly, in the basketball stadium after John Hot Rod Williams had been put them into double, triple NCAA penalty by getting money stuffed in his shoes in his locker, you know, $5,000 at a time to miss a free throw or to miss a jump shot or to throw a game. You know, Boston College had that. Let's not forget, Arizona State had that. There were a lot of schools that were accused and found to have thrown games at the collegiate level. So at the collegiate level, this oversight is going to become even more important to me than it does at the pro level, because I think you can get to these guys. I think the gamblers can.
You're talking about to the players?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting take on it. I mean, I wasn't going that deep down the rabbit hole. I was just trying to get some compensation for the young athletes that are actually playing, because, you know, some of the hardships that you encounter,
which I agree with,
in college are you know, like having the ability to wash your clothes and to get clothes and things of that nature. I didn't even think about, you know, as far as like taking dives or bribes or anything like that.
Yeah, and they do, and they have, and we've had a lot of scandals. It's just been a while since we've had one. Boston College had a bad scandal. Arizona State had a bad scandal. Tulane had an awful scandal. Again, John Williams taking all the money stuffed in his shoe, you know, $5,000 at a time, to throw games. And it cost Tulane its basketball program for a couple of years back in the death penalty days. So, yeah, I think there needs to be serious oversight. And I think that these casinos ought to give the money to the NCAA. I think there ought to be a cut. All right, we venture into that area known as the show as Hughes World.
Yes, well, I take this opportunity to try to take a shot at a Dallas Cowboy receiver. I'll tell you more about that on the other side of Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Do y'all understand that I played football 10 years in the NFL? So when I start talking like I'm talking, it's because I'm still in football mode, so back up off.
I don't understand it, bro.
No, but I'm saying that's what I'm saying. You know, you gotta stay focused, man. That's all I'm saying.
Only from the mind of Hugh Douglas.
Before I get to this Terrence Williams story, I just want to talk about this event that I'm really excited about. I'm excited about this CAMU event that's going on this Thursday from 7 to 9 at the New Cigar City, the sports bar off Roswell Road in Sandy Springs. It's Georgia's largest cigar superstore, and now it's open. You know, I'm excited about this, John, because Cigar City is one of those spots where you go, where you want to, you know, mix and mingle. But the problem was that you had to wear, like, really nice clothes. You had to wear your school clothes to go there, because it's a really, really nice establishment with some really, really nice cigars.
Right.
But since they've opened this sports bar, this takes it to the next level. So that means that I can actually go to the sports bar, watch a game, sit down, and enjoy a choice cigar. And I don't have to get dressed up to do it. So that's why I'm excited about this event.
Yeah,
that Cigar City,
mm-hmm,
is off of Roswell Road. It's the new Cigar City. It's the sports bar. It's right by the Cigar City. It's the sports bar off of Roswell Road in Sandy Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you come check me out this Thursday from 7 to 9, because I'll be there. Matter of fact, I think Randy Mack is coming. I got a few other friends that will be coming through there.
Randy Mack will be there. It's drinking night, so yeah, it's perfect.
We got some cigar connoisseurs that are going to be there, so it's going to be a good time. Me and Camu, we're going to do it big. I'm going to be the Camu Santa. It's going to be a great time. But yeah, Cowboys Terrence Williams, he got arrested this weekend for public intoxication, and the lawyer disputes this account. So basically what happened, Terrence Williams was riding around in his Lamborghini, 2017 blue Lamborghini, and I guess he abandoned it after hitting a light pole in the area of Frisco Green Avenue and Lebanon Road, not far from the Cowboys practice facility, about 4:45 in the morning. After determining the vehicle was registered to Williams, the receiver was found near his home riding an electric bicycle and was arrested. Presumably, Williams has not been charged. That was an older story. He has been charged with this, and they're charging him for fleeing the scene of the accident. Meanwhile, Williams was reportedly released from the Frisco Detention Center on a small bond of like $365. The problem that I had with the story is this. I understand that, you know, what he was saying was that, you know, he had an accident, and since he was so close to home, that he went, he got on the scooter, he got a ride home, and he got a scooter to go, you know, come back to the scene. You can't leave the scene of the crime, especially when you're driving a car like that. I think it's important to stay there. You got to stay there and at least let the police kind of figure out what's going on and everything like that. It just makes you look bad. I think what happened in this situation was he probably was drinking. This is left up to speculation. He was drinking a little bit. And I think at one point he probably felt like he should flee the scene. But when you're driving a $200,000 car like that, I mean, it's a no-brainer for everybody to find out who car it belongs to. So I think that was bad on his part. But this might be a situation with Terrence Williams. I don't know how important he factored into what the Dallas Cowboys were doing this season. But this could potentially cost you your job in a situation like this.
Well, you know, they are disputing it, a light pole, and his attorney even saying that the arrest is wholly unrelated to the traffic accident. Well, what accident then? To the traffic accident, what accident are you talking about? There are no pictures of this.
No, it's not.
And all we know is he was on a scooter. There was no sobriety test issued, you know, but of course you could get DUI for taking a scooter. But I don't know. There's got to be more to this story. It seemed like the bond was small.
Yeah, it was.
Is it $369 or something?
Yeah, it was $369. And I don't know if there's enough there, but it says Williams said he veered into the center median to avoid a collision with a man driving a vehicle in front of him that hit his brakes. The two exchanged insurance information, and a neighbor drove Williams home where the receiver said he called a tow truck. He said he's always been an upstanding citizen and handled the situation the best way I know how, Williams said. I apologize if I should have handled it a little bit differently. Now, this is the thing, John. They said he was arrested because of a public intoxication. But from that statement alone, if he gave it the night that he was arrested, don't sound like he was too intoxicated. He still had his wits about him. It's just unfortunate that this is something that he has to deal with now, especially, you know, going it like a few months before we actually get into this football season.
Right.
So, you know, heart goes out to him and his family. And luckily for him, nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt in the situation.
Well, he's listed as the number one wide receiver on the Cowboys depth chart right now. Behind him, you have Allen Hurns, Cole Beasley, Michael Gallup, Noah Brown, KD Cannon.
Deontay Thompson, too, right?
And Deontay Thompson, correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is an unfortunate situation for the Dallas Cowboys. But like I said, I'm not losing no sleep over the Dallas Cowboys receivers. Receiver potentially being in some trouble. But it just kind of messed up. You know, bad weekend for supercars because a little bit closer to home, Offset got into a little bit of a crisis this weekend. And he posted his pictures up on his Instagram feed. And he was driving. It was a green Hellcat, and he wrecked that this weekend. There was no details about the accident, but there were pictures of him in the hospital all laid up. He had a little bit of blood in his mouth, and they showed pictures of the car. The car was jacked up. Looked like it took a little bit of a tumble, but he's okay as well. But just be safe out there. I know it's the summertime.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, just
be safe out there, man.
I know it's the summertime, and, you know, everybody wants to drive fast. But, man, that's probably not the route to go, especially when you're driving these supercars and you don't really know how to handle them that well. Just better to probably just, you know, enjoy the way the engine sounds and keep it safe.
You know, and I was thinking of that when I was crossing the bridge, kind of crawling across the bridge up north at Allatoona and looking out over the lake on Saturday. And there were so many boats out, even in the kind of crummy weather, in and out weather we were having, that I thought, you know, be safe on the water too if you're out and about.
Yeah, but the thing about the water, it's a lot of snakes in Georgia, right? It's a lot of snakes that be on the water. I don't know if I'd be out there like inner tubing in a boat or nothing like that. Like, you know how people do the inner tube and float on the river?
Yeah, shoot the hooch.
No, I'm not. That's what they call it?
Yeah. Shoot the hooch.
No, I'm not about to do all that.
Oh, we've done that many times.
Oh, it's so much fun. You have to do it.
You'd love it.
Nah.
You pack a cooler. Nah. You get some food.
There's some snakes out there. Bite me on my
I've never seen a snake.
I haven't seen a snake on the Chattahoochee.
No, I remember.
Bo's seen a snake on the hooch?
No, I remember Bo was taking his wedding pictures.
Right.
And what did you see? A mongoose, a water moccasin or something?
Engagement pictures, Chattahoochee, right around Roswell, the Roswell Mill thing. Yes, there was a family of water moccasins.
Man, listen.
A family.
I ain't fooling around with that water.
There are snakes in rivers, John Fricke. There are.
Well, they exist, but I haven't seen any when I've been down the Chattahoochee.
You know what? I don't want to meet any. That's why I'm not getting in the water.
Haven't seen any.
And I'm not fishing in the Chattahoochee on the side where it's like a whole bunch of foliage and all that? No, I'm not doing that.
I wouldn't do that unless you wore, like, snake-proof pants or something.
Some waders.
That's
what I'm
saying. Whatever. I didn't know the word for snake-proof pants.
No, that's cool. Some big old rubber waders.
Yes.
And I was going to take my daughter. She's never shot the hooch, and I thought, well, you know, we should shoot the hooch this summer. And
I ain't shooting no hooch. I shoot
Don't
the hooch in a pool with blue water.
But I tell you what, you would. I may go rafting back up at Oconee again this summer.
Nah, I ain't never been.
Oh no, that's great.
That's not what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, that's great. That's a lot. Your boy would love that. A lot of big news. The NFL's in town too. What the NFL is looking at with their big spring meetings and what the Falcons are dealing with now. As we break down a big weekend in Atlanta, all ahead on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.